Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A very important but often overlooked front in that war is South Asia. We do, from time to time, pay attention to, of course, Afghanistan, but not so much to Pakistan or, for that matter, what it's up to in the region, and with help increasingly from communist China. A man who I'm happy to say does pay close attention to all of this is a frequent guest, Dr. Colonel Lawrence Sellin, a veteran of our campaigns in Afghanistan and Iraq. He is a veteran of the United States Army. In addition to being a full bird colonel, he is a man with a PhD who has brought to bear his considerable intellect on the pages of the Daily Caller and elsewhere, and graces us from time to time on this program to talk about this very important part of the battle space. Colonel Sellin, it's good to have you back, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Frank.
I wanted to start, Lawrence, by talking about something you've called to my attention, which is that the Chinese now seem to have insinuated themselves into the dialogue, such as it is, I guess perhaps even negotiations now, between Afghanistan and Pakistan, aimed at trying to bring about a measure of peace for the long-suffering people of Afghanistan. Give us the latest on what the Chinese are up to there and the prospects of these negotiations.
Well, Frank, let me give you a little background on that subject. I think President Trump asked the right question in the very beginning, saying, why are we not winning the war? Now, the Pentagon was either unable or unwilling to answer that question and simply asked for more troops and more time. Now, the reason we're not winning is because it is not a counterinsurgency that we're fighting there. It is a proxy war. And the Taliban are proxies of Pakistan. So Pakistan is controlling the operational tempo in Afghanistan. It is also controlling the supply of our troops because Afghanistan is landlocked. Now, why Pakistan is doing this? Pakistan is doing this because Pakistan is an ally of China, and China has other plans for Afghanistan, in particular to extend the Belt and Road Initiative into Pakistan. So they've taken major steps, China that is, in the region in regard to Afghanistan, and as you say, is trying to become the mediator in a peace deal. So you have China now building a military base in Afghanistan. It plans to put a battalion of their troops in Afghanistan. It is planning to train Afghan troops inside China. And as an extension of the Belt and Road Initiative, China is now offering Afghanistan a place in what is called the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. So he's taking massive steps in the region to literally push out the United States and take control of the South Asia in general.
And this question about the Chinese ambitions within Afghanistan is something that I think most of us have little appreciation of. Discuss, if you would, the mineral resources of that nation and whether that is a prime consideration for China in terms of extending this so-called China-Pakistan economic corridor into neighboring Afghanistan as well.
Well, that's absolutely right, Frank, because it's been estimated that Afghanistan has up to $3 trillion in mineral resources, and China wants access to that, as it wants access to the resources in Balochistan in Pakistan, and also wants access to the resources in Africa. So this is all part of their plan within the Belt and Road Initiative concept to, you know, exploit other countries and make China the center of economic activity, not only regionally, but globally.
Fascinating and strategically enormously portentous, needless to say. There's a facet to this that I also wanted you to get into, if you would. And our guest is Colonel Dr. Lawrence Sellin, namely the evident fight that is underway in which the Iranians seemingly are trying to challenge the role that the Saudis have historically played in Pakistan. It's sort of evolving into a shadow proxy war. This is at the same moment that, as you've pointed out here previously, the Chinese are trying to broker some sort of entente between the Pakistanis and the Iranians. How is that all sorting out?
Well, this is a very important issue, Frank, and I'm glad you brought it up, because traditionally Iran and Pakistan have had trouble on their joint border. And Saudi Arabia has long been a player inside Pakistan promoting Wahhabism and, you know, extending the number of madrasas, which are training people inside Pakistan in terms of radical Islam. Now, the situation has changed because, as you say, China does not want that type of antagonism between Iran and Pakistan, is trying to broker some type of collaboration between the countries. Now, this is also driven by the fact that, as you say, Saudi Arabia is an opponent of Iran, and the Iranians now are, because of the sanctions put on by President Trump, are trying to increase their cooperation with Pakistan. So it's driven by, you know, economic and geopolitical issues, but it's also very much in favor of what the Chinese are trying to accomplish in the region.
And you've said here in our previous conversations, Lawrence, that one of the things you think that the United States ought to be pursuing is a strategy of fracturing some of these hostile nations, especially as they're trying to sort of coordinate in what seems to be ever more strategic activities hostile to our interests, specifically by exploiting the fault line that Baluchistan represents in Iran and Pakistan most especially.
That's right, Frank. China, Russia, Iran, and Pakistan are coordinating their efforts now to not only remove the United States from Afghanistan, but remove American influence from the region for generations. Now, the United States at present does not have any leverage, in particular in Afghanistan. All we have is a presence in Afghanistan. So what the United States needs to do is create leverage. And as you say, there are fractures which the United States can exploit in terms of disrupting the efforts, in particular of China, to have Chinese hegemony in South Asia. And one of the major pain points is the China Pakistan Economic Corridor.
Lawrence Sellin, thank you very much for, again, not only your conversation with us here at Secure Freedom Radio, but your extraordinary service to our country. Come back to us again, if you would, sir, very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Diana West about political warfare aimed at the Trump presidency, the Kavanaugh nomination, and our freedom more generally. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Diana West, a woman we have the privilege of talking with each week, with her perspectives on, well, all manner of things. Today, I hope we'll focus on political warfare, a subject she's deeply versed in, notably as a result of her longtime syndicated columns, her terrific blog at dianawest.net, and not least her two great books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. Diana, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Yes, good to be with you.
So political warfare seems to me to be a pretty apt way of describing what's going on with Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to be the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. I know you're following this closely, Diana, and I'm sure most of our audiences as well, in particular this 11th hour hijinks involving a woman who can't seem to remember much about what is supposedly an assault by then high school student Brett Kavanaugh. And yet it has brought, at least for the moment, great controversy and, well, even a temporary delay, at least, to his confirmation proceedings. What's going on here, Diana, as you see it?
Well, political warfare is, I guess, the nicest name we can give to it. This is one of the most ugly and heinous attempts to frame a man that I can recall in public history. In our history, this is a desperate effort to smear and run as part of the assault on the election results. That's what this is all about when you get right down to it. We have a president duly elected, making his selections as his role as commander-in-chief, as president of the United States, to appoint nominees to the Supreme Court. He appoints a superb nominee by all accounts. And this is what happens in an attempt to essentially overturn the election results and prevent him from exercising his duly appointed powers and appointing this nominee to the court. What we are watching is the extent to which the immorality of the left, the heinousness of their behavior in terms of any means necessary to destroy a man and his family for their ends. And I as a mother of daughters, and I know you are too, Frank, I cannot get out of my head the shining faces of Mr. and Mrs. Kavanaugh's daughters in their appearance at the White House. And this is what they will destroy at any cost for their own ends.
Yeah. You know, there was that epic moment in the course of the hearings where the misconduct of both the audience and some senators on the Democratic side of the aisle was so egregious that the Kavanaugh girls were escorted from the room. And I think you're right. It's of course, not just a travesty in that respect, but in terms of what's happening to the institution. I had a opportunity to talk a little bit about this on Breitbart Radio this morning. And Diana, as a former employee of the United States Senate some 35 years ago now, I remember vividly the civility and the decorum and the dignity that people like my old boss, Scoop Jackson, and others in the Senate brought to their role as members of what was then called the world's greatest deliberative body. It has fallen so dramatically, and I shudder to think what this portends for our republic if one of the important parts of our government, an important check and balance, is now so really heinously hijacked and abused. Hey, I do want to hit a couple of other things, Diana. There's so much more to talk about that, but let me just pull in something else. We'll be talking in a bit with Bill Marshall of Judicial Watch, who actually appeared in a new video by James O'Keefe of the Project Veritas team, an extraordinary and very troubling short video about the deep state and this political warfare, again, for want of a better term, against the presidency of the elected chief executive of our country, Donald Trump. What did you make of this? And I saw that our friend Andy Bostom pointed out that James O'Keefe seems to have been reading American Betrayal, perhaps informing his work in this area.
Yes, well, there was a tweet that James O'Keefe sent out of a picture of himself with John McCain and Andrew Breitbart from some years ago. And right next to the photograph, you can see the spine of American Betrayal, which was a treat to see. Given his current interest in exposing the modern-day deep state, which, of course, American Betrayal is a history of the deep state, what James O'Keefe seems to be getting to, which is so essential, is the ideological nature of these bureaucrats. His very first video, of course, discussing this Democratic Socialist of America party member who is essentially in the guise of a State Department official, obeying the decorum and the rules and upholding the American government while he is essentially trying to take it down. This is what he confesses to in this initial video. So this is a very exciting point of exposure that I think O'Keefe is. I think he's going there, and that is the crucial ingredient that we've all been trained to look away from, going back 50, 60 years to the last time that there was a concerted effort to expose the swamp and the deep state, referring to the post-war investigations into communist infiltration. Well, it never stopped, and now we're getting to a point where maybe we can start talking about this ideological in infiltration and subversion of our institutions.
Yeah. And Dinah, I thought one of the most compelling parts of your totally compelling book, American Betrayal, was the depiction of the degree to which those who were willing to dig into these sorts of penetrations and subversion operations, whether it's by the communists or by others, have been themselves destroyed for their efforts. Their reputations, like Brett Kavanaugh's at the moment, subjected to sustained and unbelievably, you know, vicious attack. Talk a little bit about that part of what is seemingly integral part of the Democratic playbook here.
Yes, well, it is not. Yes, Democratic is probably the biggest misnomer in the this entire debate, because there's nothing Democratic in the sense of paying attention to the people's will in these tactics, which are Marxist in origin and certainly in application. So we can definitely pair what is going on with Judge Kavanaugh and President Trump and anyone else who stands up to this, what we think of as deep state swamp left juggernaut that has been attacking our Constitution and our form of government for over a century. I mean, this is a very long process. But getting back to the tactic of character assassination and destruction, it's not even, it's personal destruction in such a grotesque way that it ripples effect to the point where others are no longer going to step forward, going to be courageous, going to go to the mat, because they don't want to be destroyed. And already, speaking of the Kavanaugh incident, there's a story from, I believe it was The Hill or Roll Call today, saying that the Supreme Court is already shaping its agenda for the next session in order to pull back from controversial issues because of these Kavanaugh hearings. And what you're looking at is the effect of mob rule. We have mob rule in the Senate, where there was once decorum. The revolutionaries are inside the gate. They're on the dais. And now we have it in terms of frightening the Supreme Court into taking a different kind of docket. I mean, this is extreme in its effect, its impact, and its destructive nature. And you know, it only gets worse. And so we have to call it out for what it is.
Amen. Dinah West is our guest, and I saw a post over the weekend that I thought was really compelling. Again, the theme of political warfare just jumps off the screen, namely what Google is up to. And there were kind of two pieces to it, and I'd like you to address, if you would, with us both of them, starting with some of your own experience with Google's, well, I call it content suppression and manipulation.
Yes, and selection, perhaps. Well, in my own case, which I've been watching for some time, wondering if it was really a crystallized event, and I've concluded that it is. It's been going on so long. In my own case, I am on the Google's new search engine when I appear in 2018, despite all the things I've written recently and in the last several years. What comes up first and foremost when you get to stories about me, go back 5 years to the completely discredited and insupportable attacks on American Betrayal by a cabal of writers who wrote some 2,000 pieces. They are on the right, which is what makes it so interesting, because what we see is Google, which people associate with the left, understanding that it has allies on the right. And so it will run the pieces by Ron Radush, by Conrad Black, by David Horowitz, that launched these toxic disinformation essays at an array of conservative journals against American betrayal, which I rebutted repeatedly at large platforms such as Breitbart News, for example, and elsewhere, and yet none of my rebuttals appear, and none of the wondrous articles written in praise or defense of American betrayal appear either. So what you see is a selective tagging of my work as these people characterized it, mischaracterized it, grotesquely mischaracterized it 5 years ago.
Yeah. As the communists like to say, it's no accident, comrade, that's for sure. Diana, thank you so much for your time today, and I hope everyone will check out both American Betrayal and DianaWest.net. Take care, my dear. In the meantime, we'll talk soon. Trevor Loudon joins us next. We'll talk a bit about political warfare of another kind. His new book, talking about Keith Ellison's ominous associations and agendas, and more right after this.
Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. And I couldn't be more pleased to say that we are now joined by a man who has been at the pointy end of the spear when it comes to exposing and helping the rest of us counter those waging political warfare here inside the United States against our country and Constitution and liberties. His name is Trevor Loudon. And he is a national security expert, hailing originally from New Zealand, an extraordinarily accomplished author and filmmaker. Many of his topics fall within the rubric of the title of his book and film, The Enemies Within. One is Barack Obama and the Enemies Within. The other is The Enemies Within, Communists, Socialists, and Progressives in the U.S. Congress. It is my special pleasure to say that Trevor Loudon has just published a brand new book at Center for Security Policy Press entitled Burn This Book, What Keith Ellison Doesn't Want You to Know, A Radical Marxist Islamist, His Associations and Agenda. Trevor Loudon, congratulations on the new book, and welcome to Secure Freedom to have a visit about it. Glad to have you.
Well, thank you very much, Frank, and it's great to get the book out, and it's great to put it out under the name of the Centers for Security Policy, one of the very few organizations that actually seems to care about internal security these days.
Well, I'd like to think that there are more that just are not quite as visible as we are, but thanks to your good help and the authoritative way in which you have documented these enemies within, it's really an honor to be able to help publicize what you're finding. Start with the title of this book. It's a little curious. Burn This Book? Doesn't seem like exactly the way to help sell them.
The idea was stimulated by Keith Ellison himself, who called on Jeff Bezos of Amazon to withdraw from sale on his platforms, you know, any book that was basically deemed offensive by the Southern Poverty Law Center. In other words, so-called hateful books, etc. And we sort of speculated it was probably prompted by the fact that we were bringing this book out.
I certainly believe that to be the case.
Yeah, that it exposes Ellison in a way that he's never been exposed before. And we all heard the stories of book burners back in the Nazi era, that totalitarians typically try to suppress bad news about themselves.
Or even alternative thoughts about their agendas. That's certainly been the tradition. And, you know, what's interesting, Trevor, about this is that in addition to demanding was the word he used, demanding that Amazon withdraw from publication any books that it was thinking about producing, like this one, which was in fact released or created on one of the Amazon platforms. It also, his letter demanded that Amazon destroy any books that it was currently holding in inventory by groups that the SPLC had defamed as haters, including, of course, the Center for Security Policy. So Burn This Book sort of helps fix Keith Ellison very much in the tradition of sort of totalitarian suppressors of free speech. And that's not the only example that we have of these sort of tendencies on the part of this individual, now a member of Congress and a candidate for the Attorney General of Minnesota. Tell us about some of his other associations and what you found about the agendas that he has embraced.
Well, it's not surprising that Ellison wants to suppress information he doesn't like, because he comes out of two totalitarian trends, that the two major totalitarian trends of the last 100 years, and that is the Sharia-compliant Islamism and the old traditional communism. You know, a lot of people understand that Ellison is one of the two Muslim members of Congress, and that he is extensively involved in Muslim Brotherhood front groups. And we know the Muslim Brotherhood is the father of Hamas and Al-Qaeda and ISIS. But he's also extensively involved in the far left. He was elected with Communist Party support. He was involved with Trotskyists and Maoists as a young man, and is still involved with the radical far left today through Democratic Socialists of America and other organizations. So this man is a totalitarian to the bootstraps. He is a product of the two major totalitarian strands of the last 100 years, and wants to now inflict that upon the state of Minnesota. You know, if Minnesotans elect this man as their attorney general, what do you think he's going to do to protect free speech with his record? You know, the Attorney General is supposed to protect the First and Second Amendments, et cetera, to the Constitution, where he has a militant record opposing both. So and the book really is there as a warning that Keith Ellison is an internal enemy of the United States. And anybody who's taken the military oath of office knows that we're supposed to guard against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And what I think we need to do is understand that domestic enemies are more dangerous than foreign enemies, because they speak your language and they wear your clothes and pretend to love your culture. And so we want to point out that Keith Ellison is indeed an internal enemy. He's a domestic enemy of the Constitution. And Minnesotans and other Americans need to be aware of his extreme adherence to totalitarian ideologies.
These are powerful charges, needless to say. And we're a nonpartisan organization. We're simply concerned about the public policy implications of individuals who, you know, seem to have, at best, divided loyalties, if not actually a profound conviction that seems to be deeply at odds with those responsibilities of, say, an attorney general, for example, to enforce the laws adopted pursuant to the supreme law of the land of the United States, the Constitution. This is one manifestation of a larger problem that you have been preoccupied with for many years now, Trevor Loudon, and I commend you for the tenacity that you've exhibited in both researching and then intensively documenting and trying to bring to the public's attention a pattern of individuals who have such affiliations, associations, proclivities, or otherwise embrace the agenda of the radical left and or the Sharia supremacists. some of whom, as you pointed out, indeed a large number of whom are now serving in the Congress of the United States. One of the things I'd like you to just share with our audience a little bit about in this connection is the mini documentary series that you have been rolling out here now for the past several weeks that provide in a very succinct way documentation of this kind about a whole series of serving legislators in the United States Senate and House.
Yeah, well, I think there's been a lot of talk in recent times about security clearances, security clearances in the White House, and the fact that former administration officials from the Obama era still had functional security clearances. But I think the American public would be shocked to realize that members of Congress and senators require no security clearance whatsoever, even for serving on the most high-powered congressional or Senate committees. We're talking intelligence, we're talking Homeland Security, we're talking Armed Services Committee. None of the people serving on these committees have to undergo any form of background check whatsoever. And I've contended for some time that at least 100 members of the U.S. House and roughly 20 senators are so enmeshed in neo-communism or Sharia supremacist organizations or involved with hostile foreign powers like China or Cuba or Iran that they couldn't pass a security clearance to be a realtor in Florida. They wouldn't be allowed to drive a school bus. Yet they're serving on these high-powered committees, and no one questions them. No one calls them to account. And I contend this is why we have a nuclear deal with Iran. This is why you have the massive gutting of the U.S. military that occurred in the Obama administration. And this is why you have a massive push for illegal immigration amnesty and Islamic refugee resettlement and other issues, because you have so many members of Congress who are basically working for the other team. So we have been starting to roll out over the last several weeks mini documentaries every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Highlighting one or two members of Congress of the U.S. Senate and their ties to Muslim Brotherhood front organization, communist movements, etc. Because we know at this time of the year the American public are focused on their representatives and senators, and we want to highlight the fact that many of them are subversives. Many of them seek to undermine the Constitution, and many of them are enemies of the Constitution. But the mainstream media won't call them out, so we want to make an issue of this.
Trevor, we have to have you back for a much longer conversation about all of this, because I think what you're doing to help clarify these challenges, these enemies within, as you've called them, is absolutely incalculably important and urgently needed, particularly as we're watching important decisions being made about the future direction of our country. Trevor, thank you for your time today. Next up, Bill Marshall joins us from Judicial Watch right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we have with us a man I've come to admire greatly for his current service to our country as a senior investigator for Judicial Watch, but also for the work that he has been doing in previous incarnations, both in and out of government, conducting investigations and exposing to, well, what's called the best antiseptic, sunshine. The secrets or cover-ups or other activities that need desperately to be exposed. And his name is Bill Marshall. Judicial Watch, of course, is now a storied organization, thanks in no small measure to the work that Bill and his team are doing in bringing to light information about what Bill has called the greatest political crime in U.S. history. And we're going to talk with him a little bit about that in a moment. But I wanted to just call attention to, as well as to commend Bill for his starring role in the new video that we were talking about a little earlier with Dinah West, just released this week by James O'Keefe of Project Veritas. He has caught on tape one of his hidden cameras, a State Department official who is a self-declared member and indeed prominent activist in, apparently, the Democratic Socialists of America. And he seems to be doing the work of this DSA operation on government time. And Bill is featured in the film talking a little bit about how that is not consistent with the law. Bill, welcome back. It's so good to have a chance to talk with you. Congratulations on your new appearance on this important video product.
Thanks very much, Frank. Hardly a feature. I'm hardly featuring it, but it was great to take part in it. And they're doing such really phenomenal work over at Project Veritas.
Well, they are, as are you at Judicial Watch. And I think the synergies is probably as important as what you're doing individually. But just tell us a little bit. We talked earlier in the program with Trevor Loudon about Marxists and communists. I don't think he made reference specifically to the Democratic Socialists of America. Tell us a little bit about this group and why it should be of such concern that somebody working for the U.S. government at taxpayer expense is not only part of that group, but using government resources, apparently, to do its business.
Right. Well, DSA is sort of the latest incarnation of the socialist/communist strain. I kind of put them pretty much at the same place on the political spectrum. You know, these far left radicals that we saw this in the 30s and 40s. We saw them riddled. We saw the communists riddled throughout the U.S. government back then, and then eventually, and it was a great threat. People have forgotten, what a serious threat they were to our government, to our country.
And the damage that they did, and this is, of course, the subject of Dinah West's book we were discussing earlier, American Betrayal. You're absolutely right. This has largely been lost to history, and the fact that something like it is happening at this moment, this deep state operating against the elected president and his policies is ominous. But talk a little bit about the Hatch Act. Bill, you mentioned in the film that this individual seems to be in pretty direct violation of it. What is the Hatch Act?
Right. The Hatch Act simply, is a law that prohibits federal government employees from engaging in political activities on government time or using government resources. And what you'll see, and this is just the first video, the one that came out yesterday, in a series of videos that we, that James and his people produced up in New York, exposing various individuals who are engaged in this subversive activity. And really, there's no other word for it. Once you hear these people on tape, what James has caught, with them saying, what they're doing on government time and bragging about it, frankly.
Specifically trying to screw up, and that's not the word that was used, but to basically impede the president's program. This is resist from within, right?
Right. He says Stuart Carafa, who was the State Department program analyst who was featured in the video that was released yesterday, says resist everything, FS up. Okay, I won't spell that.
We'd get bleeped.
It would get bleeped, yeah. But, he goes on to say, I have nothing to lose. It's impossible to get fired, to fire federal employees. And sadly, he's not too far off the mark. As Richard Manning, one of the other sort of experts who was featured in that, discusses how only 0.5% of federal of the 2 million federal employees in our government get only 0.5% get fired every year. That's far below what you see in the private sector.
To say nothing of what's deserved, especially when you've got this kind of subversion taking place. Hey, is there a likelihood in your estimation that there are more people like this character? And you've indicated that there will be more on film. So I guess the answer is yes. But your sense of the magnitude of the problem?
Absolutely. Stay tuned. I think today Project Veritas will be releasing another video featuring another individual in another agency. And then I believe there will be more videos. So just keep watching.
Well, this is a conversation we're having before that happens, obviously, and the program will air after, but we will be on it like white on rice tomorrow. Hey, Bill, let me switch gears quickly because we've got too much to talk about in too little time. President Trump has announced that he wants declassified a number of documents that Judicial Watch has been seeking, as it often does, help from the courts to obtain. Give us a sense of what you think may now be coming out, the importance of transparency about these documents, and you know, where do things stand at the moment?
Right. Actually, the declassification will impact a number of my ongoing cases. Many of which we're suing for example, the Bruce Orr 302s. These are FBI summaries, written summaries of interviews they conducted with the former Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr about his dubious meetings with Christopher Steele, the author of the famous Steele dossier. After Steele had already been terminated as an unreliable source by the FBI. So you know, we're actually litigating that case right now, which is based on my request. And I understand that the president will be declassifying those. He'll be declassifying many text messages that are also subject of our litigation from my requests. Text messages of, you know, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Andy McCabe and all these characters in this conspiracy.
And this is, it's fair to say, not a conspiracy theory at this point. You have plenty of evidence that an actual conspiracy was underway, and its purpose, as in these other cases we've been talking about, has been to, first, keep President Trump from getting elected as president, and second of all, to impede his administration and its policies. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. As you alluded to, what I refer to as the greatest political crime in the history of our country, by far.
And when you say that, you're referring, as I recall, both to this particular piece of it and also the efforts to prevent the prosecution of Hillary Clinton for clear crimes.
Yes, and exactly. And there's so much overlap, obviously, between the two cases. I mean, both were designed to benefit Hillary Clinton and the deep state, which, you know, some people take issue with as, you know, somewhat, you know, too amorphous a phrase, maybe. But to the establishment, right, the embedded interests, permanent sort of government interests who want their equities protected with the election of Hillary Clinton. So this is of a piece, and you know, you had the same so-called investigators, you know, Peter Strzok, for example, and you know, investigating both, you know, both conducting both investigations or and leading both
or not, as the case may be,
or not, and there are many other players in this whose true roles have yet to be exposed. I want to see John Carlin, the former head of the National Security Division at DOJ, I want to see him put under oath. I want to, you know, see a lot of these people who have, you know, who sort of remained in the shadows.
Yeah. Well, John Brennan, it seems to me, certainly needs to be put under much closer scrutiny than he has to this point. And frankly, but for the work that you've been doing at Judicial Watch, I'm not sure that there will be even the scrutiny that we've had to date. Your work, particularly in the courts, has been heroic, Bill Marshall, and that of Judicial Watch. We're hard out of time to even begin to talk about something else I wish to discuss with you, which is the subject of a piece that you've written in The Federalist to considerable interest and response about another cover-up that seems to have benefited the Clinton team, namely TWA 800. But Bill Marshall, that is for another day. I hope it will be soon. And in the meantime, that you will stay well and for sure that you'll keep up the great work you do at Judicial Watch. We'll talk with you in the days ahead. And we'll hopefully talk to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.